Christy.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome. I know a lot of you have been waiting for an update on me or for any sort of word from me on this story. Of course, if you've been living under a rock, you won't know that the war between America and Iran, which has been talked about for decades, has now finally started. I will do my best to explain the situation as I and to analyze the situation as I see it with all the information that I've seen over the weekend. This is the first chance I'm getting to record. I am at a couple of disadvantages when it comes to analyzing a situation like this. I've got two, I guess you might say, Achilles heels. One is that I'm not stupid, and many of the people involved in this situation do appear to be very stupid. And two, I happen to believe that foreign policy should not be set by ancient prophecies written in some holy book or other, which, and again, many of the people involved in this situation seem to have that as a core belief. But with that in mind, I will endeavor to explain what has happened, to give you some takes, and maybe even speculate as to what might happen next. Before we get going, Foundations of Shakespeare is now, this is the final version of it. It's now black, as you can see. Black. Looks pretty cool. They've done an excellent job on this. Now, in the email that the publisher sent me, you can see they've got beautiful maps and color images, and they've really done a fantastic job on it. I am told that when they sent me the email last Monday, 60% of the pre-order run is now sold out. So there's only 40% of the run left. It hasn't even come out yet. So get your orders in ASAP if you want to have a first run copy. I don't know how many they're running, but that is what I was told. The other thing is I'm giving a talk. I think that is sold out as well at this point, but I'm giving a launch talk in a couple of weeks. So the people who are coming to see me for that, I'll see you then. Try to read as much of it as you can, and I'll take questions at that event. If you pick up a course, the Foundations of Shakespeare course, send the receipt to the publisher. They'll give you 50% off the retail price. I think it's retailing at £100. Obviously, you can see it's it's kind of a very nice volume. That's why it's priced there. You can get it for £50 if you've bought Foundations of Shakespeare course. It's their kind of special deal. Many other great courses available. Trivium, buy it now. Okay, so where to start with this? Well, for the past few weeks, Trump has been talking about, negotiating with Iran, trying to find some sort of deal on the nuclear stuff. We've since found out that all of that was a ruse. It was just playing time for this attack. The Israelis, with their usual, discretion and big mouths, basically just said, yeah, this was all a trick, basically, to make, to get the pieces in place for this attack. And they, in the wee hours of Saturday morning, Friday night, Saturday morning, they attacked and hit several sites in Iran, one of which was a school. I think somewhere in the region of 150 little girls were killed in a school. Quite why they hit that school is yet to be explained that I've seen. And they also hit the home compound of the supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, who is now dead. And I'll talk more about that in a moment, because there's all sorts of speculation as to, well, why wasn't he in a bunker? Why, and there's all sorts of things to get into. Now, I have to say, I didn't think that this would happen. I didn't think that it would get to the point where they actually started the war. And certainly not, I didn't think that it would be America that, opens the salvo. And the reason is, is because any rational analysis of the situation would tell you that Trump just did not move enough pieces in place to actually make a go of this war. And, you know, no aspect of any of it makes sense from the American point of view. And given that America is, you know, a first world country with a supposedly rational government, I thought, well, you know, wisdom will prevail within the Pentagon or whatever, and they just won't go for it. It seems that wisdom did not prevail. It seems that despite the, you know, very sage advice from generals and so on, Trump decided to listen to some politician or other who was telling him, yes, we can do this. Yes, we can do this. Look at how Venezuela went, blah, blah, blah. It's like he's got Napoleon syndrome, Trump, right? They told him, look, well, we'll go in there. We'll take out the Ayatollah. The people of Iran who don't like the regime will rise up. They'll overthrow the government and you'll be seen as a savior, sir. I mean, how stupid have you got to be to think that would work as a plan? You know, I liken it to you're playing Dungeons and Dragons. You haven't got a hope in hell of this thing happening. You roll the D20, hoping for a critical hit, hoping for a 20 on the roll, and it comes up 6 or 7, because that's basically what's happened here, okay? I still don't understand, even now, and it's been a couple of days now, what on earth America is playing at here, or how it thinks it can achieve its aims, given what they've put in the region, okay, and given what they're prepared to commit, basically. Because a regime change operation was always going to take boots on the ground. That calculus has not changed at all. Also, we saw in the 12-day war, you know, last year, the capabilities of the Iranians, how many missiles they've got, how they can overwhelm, you know, David's sling or whatever they call it, the Iron Dome, how they can overwhelm those systems. And we'll get into all of what has been happening since. So, again, it's a struggle to make sense of the actions of the Trump admin at this time. We have to, and again, it always feels wrong or bad to say, well, yeah, these people are just stupid, but it really does seem like they're just stupid. So anyway, they hit Khamenei and he died. Now, initially, when I saw that, I was like, well, these people lie about everything. Let's see what happened. It was confirmed. It's been confirmed by everybody. This is actual news. Khamenei dead. So then the question is, well, how on earth the Iranians knew this was coming? They were clearly prepped for this war. So how on earth is Khamenei just hanging out in his garden? You know, how is he just in his house? Waiting, like, why isn't he down deep in a bunker or hidden or, you know, why isn't he fled or whatever? And it turns out it was quite widely reported, including in the Financial Times, that he had made the decision that he was going to die, that when this conflict started, he was going to go out like a true Islamic leader and become a martyr. You know, strike me down, Darth, and I will become more powerful than you possibly imagine. Now, this sounds like, you know, to a certain point of view, this sounds like a cope, or it sounds, you know, unfeasible or whatever. But actually, lots and lots of footage has emerged of him, of Khamenei, speaking along these lines, saying that he's ready to go. There was one clip doing the rounds of him talking to this little boy, and the little boy came to him and said, you know, Supreme Leader, how can I become a martyr? And he was saying, look, you're young, you should live your life, go and be a doctor, you know, and then when you're old, when you're my age, then is the time that you can that you can give yourself a kind of, he was a very great, you know, he comes across in a lot of these clips as this very kind of sage and grandfatherly kind of figure, very kind of calm, serene almost. And this is the sort of figure that the Ayatollah was, and it does seem like he's decided to go out like this. Now, if you think about it strategically, if you think about it just like beyond the the spiritual aspect and whatnot. It does have a kind of galvanizing effect, not only on Iran itself as a nation, but on Shia Islam or even Muslims per se across the entire region. And I think that the Ayatollah was counting on the signal being given that he has chosen to martyr himself. And this is how it's being understood in the region. I mean, there have been kind of violence and riots breaking out at US embassies in Pakistan and in various other countries. Four or five different US embassies I saw being stormed. And it's obviously had a galvanizing effect on many other groups, you know, Hamas and Hezbollah and all of these other groups across the region. So even though it seems like it's kind of difficult for a Western mind to understand the mindset and understand, you know, it's just a different way of thinking. But it does seem like this is what the Ayatollah was planning. Now, that does not explain the rest of the leaders who were killed in that explosion, why he had them all meeting in his house, or indeed the death of some of his family. I think there was a three-year-old girl who was caught up. Now, I don't know if that was in the same raid or if they just also took out his family in a different area. But yeah, that doesn't explain that, but it does explain why he wasn't in a higher security place, why he was just kind of hanging out as if it was a normal day. So that's that. Now we have to have a look at what it is that, how has Iran responded? Oh, so, okay, before we get there, sorry, I need to get my thoughts in a row because there's quite a lot of stuff to talk about here. And I've only got this one video, so I'm going to try to... It seems like the thinking from Washington, and it seems like the thinking from all of these kind of, royalist Iranian diaspora who think that this spells the end of the regime. It seems that they thought that countries work a little bit like chess, where you checkmate the king, you take the king and you win the game, right? You take the leader and you win. And automatically the entire country becomes yours. Automatically the entire regime falls when you take out the king. That's how it works. I've seen a lot of people mocking this thinking online, calling it Marvel brained, you know, action movie brained, right? Fox News brained, you could say. But it really does seem like they were thinking, okay, we'll kill the Ayatollah. And that means that everybody will just give up their arms. Everybody will just give up. The regime will collapse because you take out the head of the snake. Again, analyzing stupidity, not my strong point. I like to assume that people are rational and know what they're doing. Clearly, whoever planned this operation, if that was the plan, I mean, it's just it beggars belief how ridiculous that is as a plan. Okay, I mean, talk about populist delusion. If your plan is counting on the people spontaneously rising up and overthrowing the government, that's your plan. It's not even, you have a 0% chance of that working out unless you've got agents on the ground ready to ferment that and a huge portion of the population supports it. That is not the case. You know already that Iran took out the leadership, the regime took out the leadership of the agitators, rounded up the Mossad agents and shot them. So now you're genuinely counting on normal men and women terrified as missiles are flying down to go out in the streets and overthrow the government? Are you fucking mental? I mean, even if there weren't missiles flying down, counting on the masses to act is the mass will never act. The crowd is passive. The crowd is feminine. The crowd needs to be led. So that was never going to happen. Okay. Also, this crown prince, this cuckold prince that they've got. The idea, right, he came out and he made this tweet and he said, you know, there are three Americans who've been killed. You know, you guys were heroes. You know, my grievances to you. That was his tweet, right? Something like this. Didn't say a word about the 150 little girls who'd been killed in that school. Do you think he can be the king? Do you think that the 90 million Iranians who were like, right, that school has been bombed, that's the thing we all care about. You think they're going to, well, he's out there just, you know, palling about in Israel and praising American soldiers. That he didn't make a tweet about those little girls and he thinks he can be the king. It's just, this is just fantasy. I mean, talk about fantasy politics. This is fantasy politics that we're dealing with right here. And yet it's manifesting as a ridiculous and increasingly failed operation. It seems like Trump believed that he can go in quickly, right, and do this decapitation strike and then get out quickly. That's what it seemed like he was counting on. And obviously, that is not what has happened. So let's now talk a little bit about the Iranian response. I can go into a little bit later some of the personnel in the Iranian leadership. There's this guy called Ali Larijani, who is said to be running the show, and he has been running the show for about 6 months or so. You know, maybe we can return to that later, but let's now focus on what the Iranians have done in response. Americans have bases all around the region, you know, Saudi Arabia, Oman, Bahrain, Dubai, all of these Gulf states. There's an American presence all around the in bases all around the country. And in anticipation for some sort of Iranian retaliation, before they did this operation to take out Khamenei, the Americans withdrew their troops from those bases, and they put their troops in five-star hotels in, you know, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Oman, Bahrain, et cetera, et cetera. So what the Iranians did is they literally just hit those hotels. They literally struck five-star hotels and things like that all around the region. And now we're finding out today, as I'm recording this has just come out this morning, that there are some complaints from the Saudis and others that because America cares so much about Israel, they redirected all their defense capabilities to focus them on Israel. Basically, it left all of those other places more or less undefended. They couldn't do anything about the missiles raining in on all of these different areas. I saw a stat that said Iran attacked 11 different countries, or Iran hit 11 different countries in one day, which may be a record. What is Iran doing? Well, it's showing America, one, that they know where they're... It's showing America that they have the intelligence to know where the troops are situated, to know where... Like, not just know, oh, the Americans are here. We know which hotel they're in, and we can hit that hotel. And with a precision strike, we can send a missile in and hit that. Remember, this is about regional hegemony. This is about saying who commands this area, okay? And Iran believes that it's historically been the regional hegemon. Israel wants to be, right? That the whole reason this is happening, if you can find a rationale at all, is because Israel wants this greater Israel project, okay? It wants to create a little empire for itself there called Greater Israel. In fact, Fuentes has talked eloquently on this, so you can go and watch him if you want to know more about what Greater Israel is. This is why all of this is happening. And Iran wants to show, actually, we have the capability to hit anywhere we want in this region, including hotels where American troops are hiding out. So that is why, because if you listen to mainstream media, if you listen to LBC, which I have been doing over the past couple of days, they'll say, oh, well, why is Iran, Iran is randomly lashing out and it's hitting random places, as you know, for no reason whatsoever. It's not. It's because American bases are there and because those buildings they're hitting are where they think American troops have been, okay? So that's what that's what happened there. They have also been hitting Israel. They've been hitting Tel Aviv and Jerusalem and Haifa and various other sites. And as far as I can see, quite a lot of stuff is getting through. The videos are all over the internet. And this is the very interesting thing about this war. In the age of social media, in the age of, you know, anybody with a phone can get their phone out and record, we're seeing a huge amount of this stuff in real time, stuff that we wouldn't have seen before. For example, just before I came on air, they were showing planes that had been shot down over Kuwait. Iran had shot down a couple of planes. And there was footage of an American soldier who was trapped in the back of this boot. It was like a scene from Reservoir Dogs. You know, remember when they had the guy in the back of the boot? And they were like, well, what are we going to do with this American soldier? You know, the Kuwaitis were. So we're actually seeing, like, it's like, this is like the, you know, 4K war or something. It's unusual because in the Ukraine-Russia conflict, we got a few images and things, but we weren't seeing it. But because of the way this is playing out, because it's not ground combat, you know, troop to troop, it's missiles and it's all these, you know, long distance aerial warfare and things like that, we're getting quite a lot of really good footage, which is how people are tracking to see, well, what is actually happening here. So you know, the Iranian plan, it seems to me, they've taken out radars. They took out a very big radar system in the area, which tracked, I think that was in Bahrain. Somebody will correct me if I'm wrong. So they took that out, and I think they're targeting, they're trying to take out the American vision, the American capability to oversee the region, take out their eyes. And they're also trying to deplete anti-missile stock, because for every missile the Iranians fire, they have to use two anti-missile in response, and they're really, really, really expensive. You know, we're talking billions of dollars up, you know, every single time. And we know from the 12-day war that these were already depleted. They were depleted because of the Ukraine conflict. They were depleted because of the 12-day war before. It takes quite a lot of time. They're pretty expensive to reproduce. And what Iran is trying to do is using their older stock first to try to deplete that until they run out. Now, last time, Israel lasted 12 days, and then they begged off that conflict. Remember, that is what happened. I don't know why. I still don't know why the Iranians back then decided, okay, we'll agree to this ceasefire, because clearly they were going to come again. Clearly they were. So why did they agree to it? Why didn't they just take them then? That's what I would have done. But hey, what do I know? So now it's been going a couple of days, and you can see all up and down your timeline, Tel Aviv and Jerusalem and Haifa and, you know, all sorts of other sites are being hit heavily. In Israel, they're taking casualties. Parts of Israel are starting to look like Gaza. You know, I've seen the footage. So it's like, well, how long can Israel take that bombardment before the anti-missile defense starts to run out? And what's baffling to me is that literally 1,000 geopolitics YouTube channels could have told you that before this happened. Not only that, all of Trump's generals could have told him this before this happened. The Financial Times of all places could have told you this before it happened. This is not one of those things where it's just kind of like a couple of nutters on the internet. This is basically like mainstream media as well would say, well, look, this happened last time. This is going to happen again. So, again, it's really puzzling as to what this is all about, why they've gone into a conflict that it seems like they just can't win. And they certainly are not going to be able to win it if they're not prepared to put troops on the ground. But repeatedly, Trump and Netanyahu have ruled out putting troops on the ground. So it comes down to aerial combat and all of this missile and anti-missile stuff. And we already know in a straight shootout, if it's going to be a war of attrition, Iran is going to win that. So I really don't understand what on earth they're playing at, which brings us back to the ancient prophecies and Amalek and all this, you know, Purim and, you know, this ancient festival and that ancient festival and, oh, this prophecy and that prophecy, because that's the only thing that makes sense of behavior that appears to be lunatic on paper. I cannot make any other sense of it. So it's like, right, we're going to have to go to the kook. We're going to have to go to the kook stuff because nothing else makes sense. Okay, this is where we are in trying to understand this situation. Now, I've been giving a lot of thought to what could the American or Israeli plan possibly be here. Okay, a lot of people have said what they hope to do is what they did in Syria, that, you know, they hope to balkanize Iran, they hope to make the country split apart by causing chaos in the region, essentially. Okay, the trouble is they haven't achieved that. They haven't done that. There's unity in the Iranian regime. Okay, there hasn't been an overthrowing. The martyrdom of Khomeini has strengthened them, if anything. It has caused a lot of people in the region to turn against them, to turn against America. That is, Iran is sending a message to all of these corrupt Gulf states and all, you know, House of Saud and so on. Look, we can not only can we get you, but you watch out, buddy, right? Because if any of these leaders turn around and ally with Israel against Iran, they're going to have a problem on their hands too. They're going to have a problem, i.e. you're talking about overthrowing the Iranian leadership. But what are they going to do? Some of these regimes, some of which are not all that secure, what are they going to do if they lose their own people because they're seen to be siding with the enemy against fellow Muslims? Okay, so this is part of the calculation from the Iranian side. And see, this is the difficulty that we have here. It seems like the Iranians, obviously, because they're in the region, they understand the mindset of what goes on over there. From the American side, it really does seem like they are viewing this from thousands of miles away, almost through a kind of like TV or movie lens, right? With no consideration of the actual reality on the ground, the mindset of the people, you know, all of those things that a military would usually do, or that the CIA or that the intelligence or anything, all of that stuff, which usually would go on, it seems like they've kind of disregarded that and are acting in this almost kind of disconnected and abstract way. So, It's a puzzling one to me, and as things stand, as I'm recording this, it doesn't seem to be going very well for the Americans or for Israel. What could they be doing, though? This is what I've been thinking about. Maybe their plan is to try to deplete the Iranian firepower, i.e. get the Iranians to use up all of their missile stock, all of their missile stock. The problem with that plan, if that is their plan, though, is that the Iranian missile stock is deep. They've got a pretty deep bench there when it comes. I mean, we're talking thousands and thousands and thousands of missiles. And we already know that their missile stock is greater than the anti-missile capability. So if that's the plan, they're also prepared basically to sacrifice whole parts of Israel off in order for this. And I just don't believe that would be the plan. What seems more likely is that they had this cockamamie scheme of regime change. It didn't work, and now they're panicking. This really does feel like a desperation roll of the dice as things stand, unless, okay, there's some masterstroke coming around the horizon that none of us are seeing, or unless there's some other thing that we're not seeing here. This seems like desperation from the Israeli side and from Netanyahu, and complete madness from Trump. Okay, and his speeches have been his speeches where he was telling people, go out on the street, or if you don't put down your arms, it is certain death, and all that sort of stuff. just mental, just insane. He also gave a speech yesterday that I saw where he was talking about the three dead Americans, and he said, well, unfortunately, there's going to be more. There's going to be more dead Americans. The problem Trump has got is that he's completely failed to give any sort of coherent justification for why this war is happening. The war of aggression is happening in the first place. He's basically broken every international convention, crossed every red line. You know, he's basically committed war crimes here, okay? But he's done it on almost no pretext. And the pretext that he have given don't make any sense. For example, if it was about the nuclear stuff, according to Trump's own rhetoric, they'd already destroyed Iran's nuclear capability last time. So that doesn't make any sense from the official. So they're not even trying to make sense anymore. And of course, the reason that it doesn't make any sense is because he's just doing it for Israel. He's literally just doing it for the greater Israel project. But then I look at Israel and I'm being like, well, okay, you know, the Israelis are aggressive and, you know, they want this war. And Netanyahu said that he wants it for 40 years. But now it's happening. I'm like, have you guys really thought about this? Is this legendary high IQ I keep on hearing about? Because at the minute, it doesn't really look like it's going anywhere. It doesn't look like it's going to, you know, the situation they want, the balkanized Iran, the regime change, the end of the threat in the region. I don't think any of that is going to happen as things stand. Okay. I mean, who knows? It's a developing situation. So that is that. What else can I talk about here? Because there's many other aspects of this story. One of the things that has been irritating me, and I might as well, this is in no particular order. One of the things that's been irritating me has been the Iranian diaspora, who are ringing into shows like LBC, and they're up and down your timeline, dancing in celebration and, you know, shaking their asses and stuff like that. These people are the worst. They are the absolute worst, right? I have decided that I hate them more than the Tory boys. I hate them more than, more than the hard, like the Joel Berry, James Lindsay type Zionist shill, right? They're even worse than those. These are some of the stupidest. In fact, I dislike them so much. I'm embarking on an elaborate DNA testing operation to prove that I'm not in any way related to any of them. That in fact, I'm convinced that there is an ethnic component to these people that you're seeing, because I don't believe that Iranians can be as stupid as these people. We're talking about like sub 80 IQ morons here, okay? Who are at a moment where Iran is being bombed, where little girls are being killed in school, and at a moment where the leader was killed, dancing up and down and telling people to get out in the streets to overthrow the government. They look like they're cheering on the death of their own brethren. That's what it seems like. Little girls being killed, and it seems like they're cheering it on. I mean, you know, one of the issues I've got with them, almost all women, by the way, almost all women for some reason, is the liberal feminist logic behind a lot of it, okay? And I've met some of these people in real life. I've actually met people talking along these lines, okay? And it's like, we despise these mullahs because, you know, they told us to wear the hijab. Right. And I hear this on LBC a lot. Oh, women have limited fashion choices. Therefore bomb Iran. Therefore kill these people. Therefore cause the bloodshed of millions of people, you know, to expand my range of fashion expression. And really, it doesn't feel any deeper than that. It's literally, oh, you know, when I was 15 years old, this Revolutionary Guard told me to put my hijab on. Therefore kill. As I see more and more of these ridiculous people dancing up and down my timeline. I'm having thoughts like maybe there was a reason Sharia law was developed. Because, I mean, we talk about, you know, fanatics. Liberalism of this stripe, of this deracinated, individualistic, hedonistic, moronic stripe. You know, let's bomb a country so I can go to fucking accessorize, so I can go to Claire's, so I can put a bangle in my hair. This is what it is. Absolutely stupid. And I think these people are basically ensuring that they're, regardless of what happens in Iran, that they're never going to be able to go back. I just don't understand the mindset of these people, which is why I'm convinced many of them aren't really Iranian. I'm convinced there's an ethnic component. I don't know where they're from, these people, but I'm convinced that, that I just don't get the sense that they're all genuine. There's something performative about it. There's something fake about it. It's inauthentic. And this is in stark contrast, by the way, to the millions and millions of people who've turned out in the streets for the now martyrdom of the Ayatollah. So this is what it is. Bomb us for Claire's accessories versus people who really have genuine religious zeal. I don't know. Liberalism seems like a religious zeal sometimes when I hear, I mean, some of these, I tell you what, LBC has been wall-to-wall callers of this type and Zionists. They must coordinate. It must be like, right, they're doing a call-in show here. Let's jam the lines. Or maybe LBC only takes callers from that side, but it's been infuriating to listen to that. And some of the nonsense spewed from some of these people as well. It's incredible, especially when they talk about you know, terrorism and things like this. What they're trying to do is link Iran to, you know, stuff like the 7/7 bombing and things like that. Iran had nothing to do with any of that. You know that that was a different type. You know, I mean, we've now found out that, well, let's not get into that. It's too much of a sideline. But anyway, what else is there to talk about here? We could just wrap up here. Larijani. Let's talk about him a second. The guy who has operational control, it seems, of the Iranian regime at the moment is this man called Larijani. Now, he is known as a pragmatist. He is known as someone he's secular. He doesn't wear a turban. There's been long-standing rumors in Iran that he's a British agent. I don't know how true that is or not. But it seems like he is someone who does calculate, who basically has a handle on what is happening. And if you notice, despite the fact they lost all these top people, the Iranian response, like there hasn't been any kind of change in tempo or change in the response or military command or anything like that. And one of the reasons for that is because the man actually handling things is Larijani. And this is one of the other interesting considerations now that Khamenei has gone. Because within the politics of Iran, believe it or not, the Ayatollah, especially in his old age, especially, you know, when he was in his 80s, had become quite a cautious figure. He was basically risk averse and, you know, he was against nuclear, he was anti-nuke. He actually signed a fatwa against using nukes. Always wanted to de-escalate. When the conflict happened in Gaza, he was very hesitant to actually commit, you know, to back Hamas properly or to, use Hezbollah in an aggressive way. And a lot of people have been wondering about this caution of the old man. Now he's gone, okay? Now he's gone, martyred, okay? It could be that the Iranian leadership now goes into a more aggressive mode, that far from having the effect of demoralizing the Iranians or calming them down or something, that the removal of the Ayatollah, he was actually the barrier against Iran actually trying to get those nukes, actually, you know, using their full kind of firepower and their, you know, in an aggressive capacity. He was a moderate, if you want to put it that way. Now, that sounds weird to call the Ayatollah a moderate, but he was a moderating factor against, like, the hardcore. I mean, in much the same way that in Russian politics, Putin is a moderating factor against more nationalist figures or more aggressive figures, the Ayatollah was the same. One of the interesting things that I was listening to Alexander Kuris is that the Russians, speaking of the Russians, and the Chinese have said, like, well, the Iranians don't ask for help, right? In moments where they're expecting a call, they don't ask for help. And again, it could be something to do with the pride of the Ayatollah. He had certain strange codes, right? Certain kind of honor, kind of honorable behavior and things like this, that he was like not willing, like he wanted Iran to truly be sovereign. You know, you would remember he was a child of the actual revolution. He was part of the original 79 revolution. So they had all sorts of things that they weren't prepared to do, like asking for the Russians for help or asking the Chinese and so on. And one of the things that I found interesting listening to Mercuris is that he was suggesting that now he's not there, or maybe somebody like Larijani won't have those hang-ups. Maybe they'll be on the blower straight away. Maybe we'll see a very different type of Iran emerge from this, one that is less cautious, one that is less, I mean, I hate to use video game parlance, turtly, right? The Khamenei, if you want to put it in video game strategy, turtled. He did a lot of turtle strategy. And we might see a more dynamic Iran, Iranian leadership emerge, from, especially given that it's going to emerge during this war. It's going to emerge during this war. So who knows what's going to happen? Trump, if you listen to him, keeps on, you know, guaranteeing certain death. He, you know, he's giving it the whole rah, rah, rah. But it feels like, and every time I've seen Trump talk, it doesn't feel like he's in full control. It feels like there's a lot of panic. There's been reports saying that there's a mood of paranoia in the Pentagon. Anxiety and paranoia is coming out of the Pentagon. And that I am convinced that there's some element of this that is rogue. When I say rogue, it doesn't have the normal backing of key elements of the regime. The British, for example, not involved in this, right? The media here that I've been listening to, even though, yeah, we're getting annoying people on LBC and so on, but the media in general has been saying this plan's not going to work, right? And when I say the British establishment, we're talking like ambassadors and generals and people like that, have been saying, do you know what? I don't think they've thought this through, and we're not on board with it. That's unusual. That was not the case in Afghanistan and Iraq, and it also has not been the case in Ukraine. That suggests there's some element of this that is rogue, okay? When publications like the Financial Times and even New York Times are asking these sorts of questions, when you have leaks coming out of the Pentagon, something is not quite right here. And it's not that difficult to see that the rogue element is, one, the Israelis, and two, the Trump admin, okay? If this goes really badly wrong, it could be the beginning of the end of Trump. He needs this to go right. He's rolled the dice, okay? A lot of people say, well, is it distraction from Epstein? I don't know. I think it's just because of Trump's law. He's just gone along with what the Israelis wanted. He's given in to them. But what they want is mental. And what they want is leading to something that could shape up to be an absolute disaster for Donald Trump, okay? What happens here from here, I don't know. But as things stand, that's my assessment. I've been going on for 45 minutes. Forgive me if I was a little bit rambly. There was quite a lot to get through. These are my thoughts as they stand. I'll be back tomorrow. I'll do office hours on this. If something happens, maybe I'll make another video later on today or tomorrow morning. But this is after 2-3 days of this. This is what I'm thinking at the moment. That, you know, the bottom line, the Americans don't have a plan. They went in on a roll of a dice. It didn't come in. It was a stupid idea in the first place. And the response from the Iranians, I think, surprised them. I don't think they were expecting Iran to hit those hotels in Dubai and Oman and so on, for example. Okay. I also don't really understand the missile situation, given what happened with the 12-day war, right? Unless there's some absolutely hidden ace up the sleeve that the Americans have got that they haven't told anyone about, I just don't understand. I mean, we're watching planes being shot out of the air. We're watching, you know, Tel Aviv being blown up on our timelines. I mean, I just don't get what they're doing at all. That's just my assessment. In terms of anyone that we know in Iran, I have had some word. I know one person actually did see a missile who's based in Tehran, saw a missile, and immediately went and got the kids out of school. And you know, I don't know where they go, but they seem to be safe as things stand. Probably a good idea to get them out of the school, given that they bombed a school, you know. So, you know, this is a real situation. Of course, in war, it's real people who are affected, just normal, everyday people trying to live their lives. They're not thinking about any of the stuff I've talked about. They're just trying to, well, maybe they are, but, you know, ultimately, they're just trying to carry on with life. Unfortunately, reality sometimes gets in the way. So there we are. I didn't really talk about British involvement, Starmer's position. Starmer initially came out and basically said we had nothing to do with this. Now they're being dragged in. Now they're slowly, he said, well, you're not going to get to use our bases. And then they're trying to use this line, oh, well, now it's defensive. Maybe they're going to hit Cyprus. So therefore, you can use the base. Therefore, now Americans can use the base. But we're not actually involved. We're only involved in, you know. So there's this really kind of hedgy, weird line. But as far as I can see, Britain is now being dragged into it as well. So I hope you're happy, Tommy Robinson, because, you know, there we go. I should say on that front, it's been very interesting to see where people lie, right? I mean, it's really simple. Most people have the right line, okay? We're not for this. It's obvious it's just a stupid idea, and also fuck Israel, okay? That's what basically most patriots will say. What's been interesting is watching these people write reams and reams and reams of text justifying how somehow, you know, this time it's going to be different, or because of this reason and this reason, this reason, actually we should do it. Those people are just exposing themselves as Tory boys, as snakes, as people on the wrong side, again, both in Britain and America, up and down your timeline. It's really, really now starting to see who's fake and who's not. Okay. It's been absolutely fascinating to watch play out. One person who came through it quite well actually was Rupert Lowe. Restore kept a firm line. Because I was quite, when they started, I was like, right, we're going to find out now about Restore. And they ended up on the right side of it. And surprise, surprise, since that, they've been attacked by Ben Habib and Tommy Robinson and all of these people. Well, I told you Ben Habib was an orange. And so it was. So from the kind of smaller concern of British politics, it's been quite interesting to watch all of that play out. And of course, Richard Tice and Nigel Farage and the Reform Party and every single one of those Tories who jumped from the Tory party to Reform, of course, they're 100% for the war, 100% warmongering, 100%. Keir Starmer needs to be with Trump. Britain needs to be there as a third part of this triumvirate of terror. So they were never serious about immigration or about sorting out this country. They are there for that. Okay. You have to understand they are there for that reason and that reason only. It's the sole reason. And if you don't get it now, you're never going to get it. Okay. Like I said, pick up Foundations of Shakespeare, Trivium, and many other great courses. And I'll see you next time. Let me know if you have any questions. Maybe I'll make another video.
If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.